My name is Frank Weltner, and I am the librarian of GWatch, and I am here to welcome you to the world today. I want to thank you for joining me here at the World Today. As I have told you many, many times, we live in a very, very dangerous world. A world of deception, a world of deceit, a world of lies. We are surrounded by people who entertain us to death on controlled media and in our newspapers and magazines. And the same people own them over and over again. And they hire their own kind because they want us to see the world through a Jewish lens. When I see television, I see the Jew. When I read a newspaper, I read the Jew. When I read a book, I read the Jew. Because it's very difficult to publish unless you publish through a Jewish publisher, or unless you're a reporter for a Jewish newspaper, or unless you write or perform for Jewish television studios or Jewish movie studios. This is a world that is run by the Jew, for the profit of the Jew, so the Jew may be a master of control over your world and mine. And it is time that we do something about it. GWatch.com is a website that provides you with many of the pieces of information through which you can decipher what has happened to your world. GWatch is a compilation or a library, an archive of news articles written mostly by Jews themselves, in which they talk about themselves. Some of the articles are written by people who do not like Jews, people like Al Jazeera. But some people say that even Al Jazeera is run by Jews undercover, that it might be a CIA operative. That is something that we will find out in the future, but probably not today. Because the secrets that are found in false ops, if indeed they are false ops, are secrets that go on for 50 or 75 years until you find out about them. And then, of course, it's too late. The damage has been done. Your culture has been ruined. Your government has been seized by those who do not deserve it. We live in a democracy here in America. A democracy is a place where the majority is supposed to rule. But in our nation, the minorities rule. If you're in the majority and you want to live in an all-European neighborhood, you cannot do so, because the minorities are ruling our country. The minorities have been able to hoodwink our governors and our legislators and our presidents because they have the money and the wherewithal to do this, because they are very, very wealthy. Now, the blacks are not wealthy, and many other people are not wealthy, but the Jews who run IPAC, which is the Jewish lobby, or the Israeli lobby, is extremely wealthy. And recently a publication has appeared, written by researchers from Harvard and from Chicago University, which point out exactly how IPAC has controlled America's foreign policy and has controlled it to the detriment of the people of the United States of America, and how they will continue to do so as long as our society is structured the way that it is. So that greed, intrigue, it swindles, banking money is more important than representing the people of this fine nation. Minority rule is a very evil and dire thing, and it usually ends in genocide of the majority. And that is what is going on today in America. The Jews are beginning to tell us in our presses that we have no right to live here in our own country. That we as Americans really should not exist, that we should allow ourselves to disappear from this continent, to be pushed away the same way the white man pushed the Indian further and further away from the white man's cities and towns. We are to be pushed away because our Jewish feudal masters have decided that this is the way it should be. Why do they feel this way? They write in their own books and in their newspapers, here and there, that they're afraid of us. They're afraid that if we continue to be a majority, that we might produce some sort of nationalist government has occurred in Germany, and that that nationalist government might be strong enough to stop the Zionists from continuing their hegemony over the United States of America, stopping, in other words, their minority rule and their desire to commit genocide against our people. We must band together as a people to defeat all forms of injustice in our world. And having a 2% minority ruling over our people, who are 98% of this fine nation, is something which is obscene, vile, and must be ended, and as soon as possible. Because a democracy is, as I say, a form of government in which the majority and not the minority rule. But our democracy has been perverted by the Jewish master race, because they feel that they must control everything in our world and in our universe. They must control our businesses, our radio stations, our television stations, and everything that we see and hear and feel must pass through Jewish hands and come from Jewish mouths and come from Jewish-owned celluloid in our TV studios and our movie studios, so that everything that we witness will be edited and very carefully crafted to make sure that our destruction continues. What are we going to do about it? I'm afraid that we may do absolutely nothing about it. Well, I've done my part. I've started Jew Watch. I've done some radio shows, and I'm sure that you have done things too. You've probably given donations to certain groups. And at this point, I'd like to ask you to send some donations to Jew Watch, because we need the money. We need the money to continue the Jew Watch operations and to expand them. We are trying to start a call-in radio show weekly, and if we get enough money, we may have it daily. We'll be using the Hal Turner Radio Show Network, and it costs money. And Hal himself is doing this almost for nothing, and he deserves to get paid for this. And if you would please send donations to Jew Watch, it would certainly be appreciated, and you would have more and more of these radio shows. And at the least, you would continue the work of Jew Watch. You can find a donation for Jew Watch on page 1 of JewWatch.com. And I would hope that you would look it up and act accordingly. If you can send $1, that would be fine. If you can send $5, that would be fine. If you can send $50 or $100 or $10,000, please do so. Some of you out there are quite wealthy, some of you are quite poor. But please, if you can only send $1, just send $1. And it will be put to very, very good use. I think we have to realize that what the Jewish master race is doing right now is genocide. Genocide of our culture and of our people. In 1965 and 1985, respectively, three Jewish congressmen from the East Coast. In 1965, it was Emanuel Seller, and it was Jacob Javits, and in 1985 it was Frank Lautenberg. All three of them were Jews, and all three of them decided what the immigration policy for a white European America was going to be. It was going to be an immigration policy in which whites no longer were welcome in their own country, but only foreigners. And they knew when they did this that they were going to be destroying our people. And why were they doing it? They were doing it to make Jews, who are just 2%, feel more secure. Well, I'll tell you something. In my opinion, as a European, the worst thing that a minority can do is to anger and infuriate a majority. If a majority allows a people to move into their area and to live there peaceably, the least that minority can do is to act like a minority and not try to control things. But these people, and I use that phrase purposely, these people think that they are better than anybody else. They think that they are a master race who are far above anybody, and their religious materials tell them that God created the universe for Hebrew and Jewish people only. This, of course, is untrue, because the Jews today are not the real Jews, but are false Jews, who came from Khazaria in the Caucasus mountain areas, where they converted to Judaism, and a different type of Judaism than the real Jews had. And 95% of the Jews alive today are these Khazarian upstarts who have not one drop of real Hebrew or Jewish blood in them, but are basically Turkic Euro-Mongols who are the product of invasions that swept across the area just south of Moscow and just north of Turkey. But they claim that genetically they own the land of Israel, and they have created absolute chaos in the Middle East with this myth that they have promulgated. And it's time that we snip that myth in the bud and let people know exactly where they came and that they are imposters. The country of Khazaria, which is seen in the 13th tribe by Arthur Koestler, was an area that was just north of the Caspian Sea in the Caucasus Mountains in a narrow series of valleys. And they were constantly beset by invasions from the south and the north and the east and the west. But it was difficult to get in there, so they were somewhat protected. But around 700 AD, they had their choice. Would they become Christians? Would they become Muslims? Or would they become Jewish? They decided to become Jewish. And the reason they did was that if they became a Christian, they'd have to fight with the Muslims. If they became a Muslim, they'd have to fight with the Christians. But the Christians and Muslims were not at war with the Jews, so they cleverly decided they would become Jews, and so they imported approximately 1,000 rabbis, as the story goes, and they converted themselves to Judaism. Well, they aren't Jews. They aren't Jews at all. In fact, their book is not the Torah, but it is the Talmud from Babylonia. And Babylonia is where the Jews spent approximately 70 years in captivity. And they spent another 200 or so years up in Turkey and Medo-Persia. And they intermarried and inbred with these people, began to lose their race, and when they came back to Jerusalem, they were told to get rid of their foreign wives and to only marry people that had at least some Hebrew blood, because what they had done was to destroy the master race during those years of captivity. But the people in Khazaria had nothing to do with those particular Jewish people that were living around Jerusalem. The people up there were totally unlike them. In fact, they had Mongol blood in them because they had been invaded many times by the Mongols from the east. So here we have a false group of people, false Jews, claiming they're Jews, orchestrating our news through our newspapers, our television sets, through movie studios, and telling us everything that we see and hear, telling us what it is that they see and hear, and telling us that it is our own ideas that they are putting into our eyes and ears, when they are not. They are the ideas of these false Jews who are not Jews, but who are Khazars, and who simply pretend that they are Jewish. And they use the story of the Hebrews in the Bible, which is not their people, because their people are from Khazaria, from the Caucasus, a kind of bastardized people made up of many different tribes with no Jewish blood whatsoever, except maybe some of the blood of the priest that came there to teach them about Judaism in 700 AD or 740 AD, I believe it was. So they have a little drop of Hebrew blood in them somewhere, but very, very little, because there were tens of thousands of them and only 1,000 of these priests. And the priests themselves were loath to breed with them because Jews are not supposed to breed with other people. I'm sure they considered these upstarts to be just that, upstarts, and that they brought their wives with them and continued to stay with their wives. And when these people were converted, they got up and left and went back to Western Europe, where they could live with real Jewish people and not these fakes who were in Khazaria. Now, the Jews will probably say, well, it doesn't really matter because it was so long ago, but it does matter because in our particular time here in the United States, these people are telling us that they themselves are the true descendants of the Jews who were in the Bible, and they're not. They're not at all. You and I have more Jewish blood in us than they have in them. And you need to keep that in mind, that they are fakes and they are phonies, and they have no title to any land in Israel or anywhere else. And that's just the way that it is. A huge news story broke this week. A report was made by professors from Harvard and from Chicago University, two of the finest universities in our land. Two of America's top scholars published a searing attack on the role and power of Washington's pro-Israel lobby. And they did so in a British journal, and they warned that its decisive role, the role of the lobby, known as IPAC, in fomenting the Iraq War is now being repeated with the threat of action against Iran. And these professors say in their article that the lobby is so strong that they doubt their article would be accepted in any U.S.-based publication. Now, can you imagine this? These Harvard professors had to publish their report in a British journal because they knew, as a matter of fact, that it would not be published by any journals in America because it would be too politically incorrect. And why would it be too politically incorrect? Because it would blow the cover on the Jewish supremacists who are running the United States of America through corruption and bribery. Professor John Mearsheimer of the University of Chicago, who is the author of The Tragedy of Great Power Politics, got together with Professor Stephen Walt of Harvard's Kinney School and author of Taming American Power, The Global Response to U.S. Primacy. And they wrote this report on IPAC, the Jewish lobby. And they claimed in the report that the Israel lobby has distorted American policy and operates against American interests, that it has organized the funneling of more than $140 billion to Israel, and that it has a stranglehold on the U.S. Congress, and its ability to raise large campaign funds gives its vast influence over the Republican and Democratic administrations an edge over everyone else, while its role in Washington think tanks on the Middle East dominates the policy debate. And that's something that I have always noticed, is that when you see some person coming forward to discuss the Middle East, it's usually some Jewish individual from some think tank. And when you go to the think tank on the web and look it up, you'll find that there are all these names like Weinstock and Wiesenstein and Greenspan. These are the people that run these particular organizations. And by running these organizations, they are able to control the minds of many in our country. And it's a part of the method that they use through deceit and lies to control every one of us and to control our Congress. For these are the people who come forward and give the reports to our Congress. And no one ever asks them if they're a Jew. The first thing I would ask a person, considering the amount of Jewish influence in this country, is, sir, are you or are you not, or have you ever been a Jew? And are you related to a Jew if you are not a Jew religiously? If you're an atheist, is your mother a Jew? Is your father a Jew? Do you have any Jewish blood in you? Because it has gotten that bad in this country that we probably need to start doing that, because these Jews are hidden everywhere. These authors say that the lobby works ruthlessly to suppress any questioning of the role of IPAC, to blacken its critics, and to crush serious debate about the wisdom of supporting Israel in U.S. public life. And that's so true. The ADL does that constantly. So does the Southern Poverty Law Center. If anybody criticizes Israel, people who are members of those groups will generally stand up and gladly say that these people are anti-Semitic, that they are creating hate in our country. Whereas, as a matter of fact, it's all right for Jewish individuals to stand up and talk about Islamofascism and other hate words about the Arabs, who until 9/11 had done nothing to the United States at all. And according to these two authors, the reason that 9/11 occurred was because of IPAC. Because of IPAC forcing our government, through its bribery, to do the work of Israel and to anger the Arabs. Walt and Mearsheimer have written that, quote, silencing skeptics by organizing blacklists and boycotts, or by suggesting that critics are anti-Semites, violates the principle of open debate on which democracy depends, unquote. And that's true, and they've done that to me at Jewwatch. I've had to move Jewwatch from one server to another. I probably moved it 20 times. I lost my radio show as a result of the ADL constantly calling the radio station and complaining. Now, if I were to constantly call people who shop at a Jewish store and say, I don't want you shopping there because Jews run it. Well, I'd be called an anti-Semite. But they can do that to a Christian or to a Gentile of any type, any day of the week, and it's okay. But this is one of the things that's wrong with the Jewish master race. They feel that they are so far heads and tails above us that they can do anything that they want to crush us. Walton Mearsheimer also wrote that, quote, the inability of Congress to conduct a genuine debate on these important issues paralyzes the entire process of democratic deliberation. Israel's backers should be free to make their case and to challenge those who disagree with them. But efforts to stifle debate by intimidation must be roundly condemned, unquote. And the two authors added, in the 12,800-word article published in the latest issue of the London Review of Books, that they do this all of the time. Their article focuses on the role of neoconservatives within the Bush administration, something that I have talked about for years, in driving the decision to launch the war on Iraq. Now, the Jews, for years, have been saying that, oh, well, you don't want to go to Jew Watch and find out what they're talking about, even though they publish mostly things that are written by Jews, because Jews do talk among themselves, and they kind of confess what they're doing, and I put that up on Jew Watch. Well, here we have two professors from the two greatest universities in the United States, the University of Chicago, where the first atom bomb was developed, and the Harvard University, one of the oldest school in America, both of which now, by the way, are run by Jews. The Jews run about 60% of these universities. So I don't imagine these professors are going to go very far now that they have told the truth about IPAC. The article says, quote, the main driving force behind the war in Iraq was a small band of neoconservatives, many with ties to the Likud, unquote. Mearsheimer and Walt argue, quote, given the neoconservatives' devotion to Israel, their obsession with Iraq, and their influence in the Bush administration, it isn't surprising that many Americans suspected that the war was designed to further Israeli interests, unquote. And I have suspected that for a long time. I know that if you're listening to me, you probably suspected that for a long time, which is why you found your way to Jew Watch and to the World Today news program. It is rather obvious to anyone with a brain that the Jews inordinately affect American policy. I mean, for one thing, we have two Jews on our Supreme Court. These people are less than 2% of America, but they own 22.5% of a Supreme Court that determines constitutional law. And in my opinion, Europeans should not have a single minority there. It should all be Europeans. It should not be inclusive. It should be totally exclusive. We have had too much inclusiveness in our country. Minorities should basically sit in the corner and lick their wrists and shut up and act like minorities. But the Jews refuse to do that. They act like they are the majority. They act like they are the emperor. And in fact, they have been able to make themselves the emperor in a country that is 98% non-Jewish, which is disgusting. And it doesn't show much for Europeans that they would allow a tiny, insignificant minority to act that way without slapping them down and saying, you can't do this. This is unfair. This is a democracy. It is rule of the majority and not rule of the minority. In their article, they write, quote, the neoconservatives had been determined to topple Saddam even before Bush became president. They caused a stir early in 1998 by publishing two open letters to Clinton, calling for Saddam's removal from power. The signatories, many of whom had close ties to pro-Israel groups like the Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs, or the Washington Institute for Near Eastern Policy, more of these Jewish operatives, and who included Elliot Abrams, John Bolton, Douglas Feith, William Kristol, Bernard Lewis, Donald Rumsfeld, Richard Perle, and Paul Wolfowitz, had very, very little trouble persuading the Clinton administration to adopt the general goal of ousting Saddam. But they were unable to sell a war to achieve that objective. They were no more able to generate enthusiasm for invading Iraq in the early months of the Bush administration. They needed help to achieve their aim, and that help arrived with 9/11. Specifically, the events of that day led Bush and Cheney to reverse course and become strong proponents of a preventive war, unquote. This article, which is already stirring furious debate in U.S. academic and intellectual circles, also explores the historical role of the lobby. Now, you can imagine these congressmen who are in the employ of this lobby. And Jews, according to an article in the Wall Street Journal recently, give between 50% and 70% of all money for the people running for the legislature. 50% to 70%, and they're only 2% of the country. And these people like to consider themselves to be a people who are put upon and downtrodden. And yet they're the very richest people in this country. And they wield their money so that they can protect and further their little religious state of Israel, which is a real gluttony for terror. It loves to terrorize its neighbors, and that's how it started. But the article, which is stirring furious debate, continues by exploring the historical role of IPAC. And it says, quote, "For the past several decades, and especially since the Six-Day War in 1967, the centerpiece of U.S. Middle Eastern policy has been its relationship with Israel." The article goes on to say that the combination of unwavering support for Israel and the related effort to spread democracy through the region has inflamed Arab and Islamic opinion and jeopardized not only U.S. security, but that of much of the rest of the world. This situation has no equal in American political history. Why has the U.S. been willing to set aside its own security and that of many of its allies in order to advance the interests of another state? Well, it's because of money and greed. The money and greed of the Jews, the master race who have taken over our country. The two authors argue that far from being a strategic asset to the United States, that Israel is, quote, becoming a strategic burden, unquote, and, quote, does not behave like a loyal ally, unquote. They also suggest that Israel is also now, quote, a liability in the war on terror and the broader effort to deal with rogue states, saying that Israel and the U.S. are united by a shared terrorist threat has a casual relationship backwards. The U.S. has a terrorist problem, in good part because it is so closely allied with Israel, and not the other way around. Support for Israel is not the only source of anti-American terrorism, but it is an important one, and it makes winning the war on terror more difficult. There is no question that many Al-Qaeda leaders, including Osama bin Laden, are motivated by Israel's presence in Jerusalem and the plight of the Palestinians. And unconditional support for Israel makes it easier for extremists to rally popular support and to attract new recruits, unquote. And that's the truth. And if the Chinese had placed a colony of Chinese here and pushed our people out of California, which they may yet do, we would fight forever to keep that territory. We wouldn't allow that to happen. We wouldn't lose Hollywood and San Francisco and Sacramento and the different valleys where we grow our fruits and vegetables. We wouldn't allow China to have that. We would push them out. Although right now we seem to be inviting them in, and the reason we're inviting them in is that groups like IPAC and the ADL, who say that we as white Europeans are the most hateful people in the world, don't deserve to have this continent anymore. They are the ones that are pushing these people in here through their anti-white, anti-Gentile immigration acts. The authors who wrote this report question the argument that Israel deserves support as the only democracy in the Middle East, and claim that in some aspects of Israeli democracy, they claim that some aspects of Israeli democracy are at odds with core American values. Unlike the U.S., where people are supposed to enjoy equal rights irrespective of race, religion, or ethnicity, they point out that Israel was explicitly founded as a Jewish state, and citizenship is based on the principle of blood kinship. Given this, it is not surprising that its 1.3 million Arabs are treated as second-class citizens. The most powerful force in the lobby is IPAC. the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, which Walton Mearsheimer called a de facto agent for a foreign government, which they say has now forged an important alliance with evangelical Christian groups. The bulk of the report is a detailed analysis of the way that they claim that the lobby managed to change the Bush administration's policy from halting Israel's expansionist policies in the occupied territories and advocating the creation of a Palestinian state, and diverted to the war on Iraq instead. They write, quote, "Pressure from Israel and the lobby was not the only factor behind the decision to attack Iraq in March 2003, but it was critical. Thanks to the lobby, the United States has become the de facto enabler of Israeli expansion in the occupied territories, making the United States complicit in the crimes perpetrated against the Palestinians," unquote. And by the way, the authors conclude that Israel itself would be better off if the lobby were less powerful and U.S. policy more even-handed. And if you want to read more about this, you can go to United Press International News Analysis and Insight, an article entitled Pro-Israel Lobby in the U.S. Under Attack. And you will read that and much, much more. And you will also find at YouWatch today a link to the entire report from these two professors at the University of at Chicago University and Harvard University. The entire report is there at a link from our news area. You will also, by the way, as I said before, you'll find a link to the donation column, and if you will give donations, we might be able to continue having live radio shows where you can call in and talk to me. I think that some of you would prefer that to having me talk for the entire hour. But that costs more money. It takes phone time. It takes technical time for Mr. Turner, who has to tend to the phone. And he deserves to be paid for that, and he demands to be paid for it, and I don't blame him. So if you will send your donations to the address on GeoWatch and write your check out to Frank Weltner so I can cash it easily. It is not tax deductible. You cannot deduct this. This is a gift that you will make to me and which I will use to keep this particular show on the air and to pay for other expenses that are incurred in GeoWatch, which is now reaching over 1 million visitors a year. Over 1 million visitors a year come to GeoWatch. And that's amazing. And if for no other reason, you should donate to GeoWatch by sending a money order or check to Frank Weltner at the address that's given there on GeoWatch so that the Jewish master race will be angered and disappointed that they can't stop this particular movement, that it's getting larger and larger. We hope to have 2 million people next year coming up to GeoWatch, and then 3 million, and then 5 million, until the entire world is able to find all of this information concerning the deviousness, the lies, and the corruption that has been brought into many governments around the world by the people who consider themselves to be the Jewish masters of the entire world, and would like to be that. And we who consider ourselves sovereign here in America are actually living under Jewish feudalism. And I'll tell you how that works. In feudalism, you used to have the king living in a tower way above the groundlings who would work for him. And they couldn't get near him because he had guards around his castle and his tower, and he would be up there eating baked turkey and pheasant while the poor little groundlings were out there groveling, trying to produce a little bit of wheat and things that they could be taxed for. And the king in the castle would be living high on the hog. And that's precisely what we have in the United States. We have these huge glass buildings in every downtown in the country. And at the top of it is some Jewish-owned organization, some bank that owns that building that is renting it to Gentiles, who are then bought out by Zionists and pro-Zionists, who try to own everything that is profitable in this country. So yes, those buildings in your downtown areas are the Jewish feudal castle. And that's where they are. They're in those big buildings, in the most plush office. and the other people are their slaves. And that's exactly the way it is, and if you don't like it, that's too bad. I said it, I know what I said, and I meant to say it, because it is the way that things are. I found a rather interesting news article by one of the Jewish newspapers that's on the internet. And it's an article by Ynet News about a far rightist who says that bird flu, which has now attacked Israel, they have, I believe, four kibbutzim that have confirmed flocks of turkeys and other fowl that are they're basically sick from bird flu, and they're being culled, and 500,000 of these animals are being killed, that this particular fanatic, they call him a fanatic, he looks pretty fanatic. If you go to the article on Jewwatch, it has a picture of him. He looks kind of Charles Manson-esque, actually. And the article says that the bird flu outbreak in southern Israel is God's punishment for the Gaza Strip and northern West Bank disengagement, according to the National Jewish Front chairman Baruch Marzel. Marzel wrote in a letter to southern residents whose communities were affected by bird flu that, quote, "You were punished by God, and now you'll have to ask for the forgiveness of Gush Katif residents," unquote. In the wake of the bird flu outbreak, right-wing Israelis have been voicing various theories regarding the connection between the disease and the implementation of the pullout. Marzel himself is certain that such connections exist. He said that the kibbutz was used to house the expulsion headquarters because of greed, and therefore the bird flu outbreak happened there of all places. Marzel later told Ynet News that anti-pullout activists were pained by the fact that nearby southern communities did nothing to help Gush Katif residents. They were neighbors, and so even if they do not support the settlements of Judea and Samaria, they should have assisted their neighbors, Marzel wrote. Yet they have made money from the expulsion of Gush Katif residents in those settlements. And the right-wing Marzel added, southern residents should ask former Gazans for forgiveness and then seek advice with leading rabbis. Maybe that will help them, he said. But he quoted that himself, saying that these residents will be waiting for compensation now, and government officials will abuse them and probably not give them anything. Maybe then, he said, they will understand and have little sympathy for those expelled who are waiting for their compensation money. So there you have it. Nuts come in all flavors and ethnic varieties, and Mr. Marzel, if he's a nut, I'm not sure if he is a nut, but some people have said that he is. Now, the Jews are claiming that Hezbollah is going to attack them during Purim. I think this is a disinformation policy of the Mossad to make the world look upon Israel as the poor little child that's being attacked unfairly by vicious terrorists in Palestine, because the terrorist state of Israel is, in fact, the biggest attacker there is. I mean, after all, they stole this land from the people who live there so that they no longer have access to their property. The Israelis are living there, so they're as angry as a nest of hornets, as you would be if you came home and found that your house and your culture had been stolen from you, which you probably find every day anyway, if you live in America, because your culture is being stolen from you, slowly and incrementally, by the imposition of foreigners who are not like you into your country, something that you don't want, but your Jewish masters in IPAC and at the ADL want it, and they want you removed very desperately, because they hate you. They absolutely hate you with a passion. But Israel's military is on increased alert now, as a part of this fraud on its northern border with Lebanon, following intelligence reports that Islamic militants with the group Hezbollah are planning attacks there. The security forces, according to stories I've read, are stopping farmers on Israel's northern border, telling them they can't work their fields. They've closed an industrial area in the northern town of Matula. And some locals said they're fed up with the threats to roads and security and the closing of the roads. Last week, the U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, who is a known liar by everyone in the world because she has lied incessantly about weapons of mass destruction and other fantasies of the Bush administration, which would make her look just as foolish as she can look, Ms. Rice called Iran the Central Bank of Terror. Well, Ms. Rice, you have it backwards. The Central Bank of Terror is Israel and the United States Army that has bombed people from 5 miles in the sky, has bombed aspirin plants when a president needed to get Monica Lewinsky, a Jewish lady who seduced him in order to get him into trouble. She was probably a CIA and Mossad operative. He bombed this aspirin plant, killing innocent people who were working in the plant and around the plant. It turned out the plant had no weapons of mass destruction, no chemicals, no nothing. They were making aspirins. No, Ms. Rice, the real central bank of terror in this world is the United States of America, which is an operative of the terror state of Israel, as pointed out by the professors from Harvard and Chicago University in the particular report that they issued this week, warning Americans about IPAC and how our country is being persuaded by IPAC to have foreign policies for Israel that are basically harmful to the United States of America. A Middle East analyst who runs a think tank specializing in Iranian affairs said Iran funds Hezbollah to the tune of $100 million a year. Well, I'd like to see the source for that. Where did you find that out? Did you go in there and look over their books? I doubt if you did. Another piece of misinformation, an Israeli academic by the name of Meir Litvak, an expert on Iran, said there are indications that Iran is trying to use Hezbollah to distract attention from its own international predicament over its nuclear program. Well, that could be, but what does that have to do with Israel thinking that Hezbollah is going to attack? I mean, are you basically saying that Hezbollah is going to attack to make Iran look better? I don't think that would make Iran look better. I think that would make Iran look worse. Because if Israel's under attack, since the United States is its vassal, the United States would be more likely to look upon Iran as someone that's not so good for Israel. Hence, it would be in Iran's interest not to have Hezbollah attack Israel. And if Hezbollah attacks Israel, one could probably rationally figure out that maybe the Israelis want Hezbollah to attack. Maybe they have some provocateurs within Hezbollah that would get them to attack so that they can prove the case and make themselves look like a victim that needs special permission to be terrorists against local populations in Lebanon and Gaza and elsewhere, and might have a need, therefore, through their lie that Iran is the one that is pushing Hezbollah to go and attack Iran and to destroy their nuclear program. But no one's really said much about attacking the Israeli nuclear program and their 200 to 400 bombs that they have, which they say they got from Dimona. But if you ask me, the Israelis have the wherewithal to steal 400 nuclear weapons from the United States without anybody saying anything about it. Heck, they were able to practically sink the USS Liberty and there wasn't any investigation. And the law said there was supposed to be an investigation. So if they can get by with trying to sink a ship and killing 34 of our sailors and wounding 200 of them without a single investigation and where everybody was told not to mention it, or they go to jail, I'm sure they could steal 400 nukes with no problem. That shouldn't be a problem for people who control the United States of America as though it's an Israeli annex. I see no problem with that at all. And since there really hasn't been a whole lot of nuclear blasts from Israel or from South Africa where they said they had nuclear blasts, I'm not sure if they did or not, but they've always said it, I would think if they got the weapons, they just pick them up at their local United States 7-Eleven military weapons of mass destruction shop and took them on to Israel. And we had the dancing Israelis in New York, dancing over 9/11 and laughing. We were told that they were Arabs, and they were Al-Qaeda, and then we found out that they were Israelis. So instead of going to Guantanamo to be tortured, they went back to Israel without any investigation whatsoever, along with 220 other spies. That's the way business is done in America. The Israelis get everything they want because they run IPAC, and IPAC pays for all of the congressional expenses when they run for office. 50-70% comes from Jews, who are most of the members of IPAC. Litvak, who again is a consultant for some little think tank, he argues that Iran wishes to end the relatively quiet period between Israel and the Palestinians. He said that the country has sent more money to Islamic Jihad and Hamas operatives for terrorist attacks carried out inside Israel. And he told CBC News that there is a price list. They raised the prices in recent months. Hezbollah is financing rogue Fatah elements, and they have raised the price. Well, how would he know that? And did CBC ask him for the sheets of paper with the receipts for that particular rise in price, or for the money that was given to Fatah? You see, if you want to say these things, you can just say them. And if it's pro-Israeli, it's okay. If it's anti-Israeli, then you're an anti-Semite. But if it's pro-Zionist, if it's pro-Israeli terror state, hey, that's okay. You can say anything that you want. He may be telling the truth, but he may not. And I don't see that they've asked him any questions here to prove that what he says is true. They just let these people who say these things about Iran and about Israel and about Hamas and Fatah say whatever they want. Because the news, like CBC and NPR, I know NPR is run by Jews. I'm pretty sure CBC is a Jew. Certainly wouldn't let that be a free news place. They would obviously run it. In fact, I'm going to look it up tonight and find out. I bet you that there's a whole list of Jewish names at the top of CBC News. After all, the Aspew family runs 65% of the publications in Canada. And that's a Jewish family. And in America, the Jews run the NPR, National Public Radio. And there was a Goyim, a Gentile, that was at the head. And he wanted to make things less liberal. And they kicked him out and said, "Why, you're against freedom of speech, sir." But you put the Jews in there and they say, "We don't want anything anti-Zionist on our show." And, well, that's okay. Oh, listen to the Jewish master race. That's all right. Oh, yes. Well, since the start of the year, Iranian President Mohammad Ahmadinejad has expressed contempt for Israel, addressing huge rallies of angry Iranians, and he's called for Israel to be wiped off the map and denied the Holocaust. And a lot of people have denied the Holocaust, and a lot of people would like to see Israel wiped off the map. I'm sure there's 3 billion people at least that would like to see Israel wiped off the map. And I believe I read something recently that more than a majority of Europeans and Americans don't believe the Holocaust was as horrible as it was said, that they're beginning to doubt many of the historical revisions that were made during the Nuremberg trial, and very, very little scientific or forensic evidence was made available. I would like to see a CSI Auschwitz program, a full year, 26 shows, with all of those beautiful forensic labs going to Auschwitz, testing all of the so-called gas chambers, digging up the ground, and finding if there is any evidence for the Holocaust there. I mean, after all, they said that 4.5 million people died there originally. How do you hide 4.5 million people? There's got to be evidence there. Why don't they want anybody to look? In the opinion of many, it's because they have a lot to hide, that maybe it didn't really happen that way. They don't want you to find out. And the best way to do that is to make it illegal for you to even try to look. And that's the problem. During the Nuremberg trial, no one was even allowed to defend themselves. No one was allowed to go to Poland. No one was allowed to test anything up there at Auschwitz. And so the whole thing just kind of, well, It was just out there like a Stalinist show trial, and that's exactly what it was. It's run by the Jewish Fascist Committee of Moscow. And America sent almost all Jews to the table, so there really was just an anti-Gentile faction there that was running the show. It was a very hateful trial, and we have a lot to answer for in our cruel treatment of the defendants there, and the way in which they were hanged, so that their hanging took up to 20 minutes per person for death to occur, because we were sadistic and cruel and mean. Meanwhile, Hamas has presented its new cabinet of 24 members, including one woman and a Christian. Now, this particular cabinet stands for the destruction of Israel. Now, that is the will of the Palestinian people. And either you believe in democracy or you don't. You say, well, I don't think that Israel, you might say, should be wiped off the face of the earth. But I believe in democracy. Well, here you have this conflict. You have Hamas that believes in wiping Israel off the face of the earth, democratically elected by the people who were wiped off the face of the earth. The Palestinians were wiped off the face of the earth because Israel went in there and destroyed their culture and their nation. They deported them. When they ran away, they wouldn't let them back. They took their houses. They either lived in them or demolished them, demolished their cemeteries, their roads, their schools, their records, so that nothing remains of their culture. If a Palestinian goes back, he wouldn't even be able to find out where his family lived because the building was purposely demolished. The street names were changed. Everything was moved around, so it would take a surveyor to find anything. There's your lies and deception. There's your vile evil of the Jewish master race, that they would be so cunning as to do all of that, and that they would know to do all of that. I think what that says about them, that they would have that much hate in their heart, that much bloodlust, to take these people's land and to wipe away their memory forever. And then to complain when they come in and blow up their sons and daughters on a bus. Oy vey, why did you do that? Well, maybe it's because you killed the girl's brother last month, or her father. And maybe you gunned him down. Maybe he was a young Intifada person throwing a rock at an Israeli soldier and he blew him away just for fun. Maybe that's why she did it. Maybe she had a good reason. You know, maybe when you live by the sword, you're going to die by the sword. So at any rate, Israel. Israel is the most shameful country in the world right now. And most people in the world are on to what they're doing, and they don't like it. I want to bring up something that has been happening that is very, very important that you've heard nothing about. The people of Gaza Strip are starving. The people of Gaza Strip are in a concentration camp that is walled by the Israeli military, and they're actually building real walls 18 feet high to contain these people and to starve them out and to starve them to death. Children are dying. Old people are dying. Young people are dying. Mothers are dying. They're dying in the streets because the bakeries cannot function. There is no grain because the Israelis will not allow any grain to be delivered. They say, oh, well, it's too dangerous. It's a threat to our security as Israel by allowing bread dough to enter Gaza Strip. Now, can you imagine that? Here you have the Israeli military keeping everybody in Gaza Strip. And they're saying that allowing a few bread trucks to go in will destroy the security of Israel. That for some reason when these trucks carrying grain go to the bakeries in Gaza to feed these people and to feed these children, to bring cheese and milk and meat and vegetables for them, that this will cause the Palestinians to bomb Israel. Can you imagine that? They are using food as a weapon. which is against international law. They are using food as a genocidal weapon against the people of that much tortured area that has had the misfortune of living with the Zionists and their cruel hegemony over their land, by which they have stolen everything from them. So I'd like you to write your congressman on email and tell him, look, we need to open up Gaza and give it food. And if the Israelis won't give them food, then America needs to bring its ships over there and its helicopters and to helicopter and parachute flour to the Palestinians in Gaza. Because this is genocide, and just because the Israelis are doing it doesn't mean that it should not be stopped. Yes, the Israelis are God here in America because they run our silly Congress and our silly president, who, just to stay in office, will do anything. They don't care if they betray their people. If the Jews want something done, by God, they'll do it, because they want that 50 to 70% campaign money from IPAC that the Wall Street Journal says that they're getting. And if they don't get it, they won't be in office. And to them, the name of the game is to stay in office, to become millionaires, to become people of power and prestige. And if it means you have to sell your soul to do it, hey, that's a small price to pay to be able to sit in the Senate bar and have drinks for next to nothing and to make decisions that affect everybody, even though you're a nothing person. That's something that you can do. It's a wonderful thing for you to do. And I don't blame these people for doing that. That's what America's based on, is greed, power, lust, wealth, control. You would think from listening to people on the television, which is run by the Jewish master race, that this country is about greed and power, that you are measured as a person by the amount of money that you have in your pocket, by the size of your house, by how nice your car is. Well, I don't know about you, but I don't go along with that. I have an old, rusty Chevy, and I'm not going to get rid of it until it stops working. I have an old house. I have two old houses, actually. I'm moving from one to the other. And I don't want to owe any money. I don't buy anything. I spend most of my time working on Jew Watch. Which brings me back to donations. I am supposed to mention donations because we're trying to increase our radio presence by making this into a call-in talk show. We're also trying to increase other things on Jew Watch, but we need the money to do it. And I want you to sit down, I want you to write a check out to Frank Weltner, and go to Jewwatch and look for the donation button up there. It's a bullet up toward the top of the page, or the first page of Jewwatch. When you click on it, it'll give you the address to send the money to, and it says, you know, that it's not tax deductible. You cannot deduct it. This is simply a love gift that you're going to give to make sure that this program stays on the air, and that it will stay on Jewwatch, and the Jewwatch will continue to operate. And we need your money. I've never asked for money before, but we really do need your money now, because we're trying to do things to help to promulgate the ideas that the Jew Watch gives to you through its library of mostly Jewish writers who have told exactly what the Jews have done in the 20th century, from communism and the running of the Soviet Union, where they killed 65 million white people who were Gentiles, and viciously killed them, the names of the very Jews who did it, the names of the Jews who are in the White House, in the Clinton administration, the Bush administration, and in fact, it was Jew Watch that outed Madeleine Albright. Yes, it was Jew Watch. And I was basically the person who did it, being the librarian of Jew Watch, and having used the library of Jew Watch to know what I was talking about. I did out Madeleine Albright. At any rate, the time for our show has come to an end, and I want to thank you for being here with us. I want to ask you to go to Jew Watch every day of the week. I want you to get the Alexa Research Toolbar, put that on your Explorer, and then you'll be able to do even more research using that bar. It's very, very useful. Don't forget, go to Jew Watch, give me a donation, and we will see you back here next week. Do the right thing now, and have a very nice week.